Hold your songbooks open, if you don't mind, to that song we just sang. And I appreciate Ed leading that. I was thinking a lot about our character this evening, Onesimus. And especially as Onesimus might have met Paul, we'll talk a little bit about him. And incidentally, if you want to ask a question, you want to enter into the discussion, I encourage you to do that. If you'd like a card, I've got some up here on the front bench. And Wes will be glad to get that to you. If you just hold your hand up, we'll get you a card. But here in a few minutes, 10, 15 minutes, whatever, any question you'd like to ask, anything you'd like to discuss about Onesimus, who is an extremely interesting character, please feel free to do so. As we close out this series, though, I look at this song, 841. I'd like for you to focus on that with me. I know this song was not written back in the first century when Onesimus met Paul, and yet some of the sentiments within it, I like to think, might have actually been in their conversation. As you may notice on the outline, and you may or may not have thought about, Onesimus might well have been aware of Paul. His master was converted by Paul, to be sure, and he might even have met him, or at least seen him. He might very well have heard of him. We don't know what his circumstances were. We know that he found his way to Rome, and Paul was in Rome, of course, under house arrest or in his first imprisonment. Somehow they met. Somehow they talked, and Onesimus was converted. When you look at this song in number 841, especially verse 2, I'd like for you to go with me there again. I appreciate Ed leading the song. I didn't think about it, but he led this, and again, some of the sentiments here. Maybe it was that Onesimus, when he met Paul, was very troubled and very tired. He would have traveled a good distance from the area of Colossae. He might have been troubled and tired, as the song says. He might actually have been sick with his circumstances in life, the sorrow of having been a slave. And maybe it was bad enough, just the whole idea of being a slave, that caused him to run away. He might have, and there may be some indication in Philemon, if you read that and looked at that text recently, he might have committed some crime there. A lot of speculation about that, that caused him to leave. But nonetheless, he might have been sick with sorrow and pain. And certainly, Onesimus might have looked at this, and of course, when it expresses the sentiment, there are others living in sin, blessed with earthly gain. I think it's probably a very common sentiment of a runaway slave to think that just the very fact that his master owns him, perhaps owns other human beings, is sinful. That tends to be the common sentiment. But certainly his master Philemon was blessed with earthly gain, and he was not. And notice how it says, take new courage. We cannot tell what the morrow may bring. If you're looking at the prospects of Onesimus, we're talking about hopeless people or people in hopeless situations. He had no prospects. The fact that he is a runaway slave means he is at the absolute mercy of his master. One of the things that he has going against him, and you notice I put this on the outline, he's a criminal. By the very fact that he runs away, he is a criminal that has incurred the wrath of his master. And his master Philemon is completely within his Roman rights, legal rights, to kill Onesimus, to torture and kill Onesimus, just for running away, let alone any additional crime he may have committed. And can you imagine a conversation in which Paul is saying to him, I want you to be encouraged. I want you to take new courage, because you can't tell what the providence of God may have for you in the future. God has led you here. I'm here. We both got here by some maybe strange set of circumstances, and maybe under circumstances neither one of us a few years ago would have thought about. Paul certainly didn't reach there the way he thought he would, and Onesimus now here is a runaway, and yet nobody can tell what tomorrow will bring. I can imagine Paul almost saying something exactly like that, and as the song expresses, when the dark clouds vanish away, then your heart truly can sing. Onesimus had a lot going for him. He was a slave. He was the mere property of his master, of his owner, Philemon. And that tends to make a person very bitter, very to have a bleak outlook on life, maybe to be very distrusting, distrusting of anybody and everybody, man or God for that matter. But to come to the point where you don't believe in people, and you certainly don't believe in the goodness of people, and perhaps even to come to the point where you don't believe in the goodness of God. Now, I know what that feels like, and some of you do as well. Because of circumstances in life, if there is a God, then why has a God brought me to this? And if you've ever been through a bad set of circumstances, you know how bitter you can become, and you know how faithless and really hopeless you can become. In Onesimus' life, I don't know what went on in his life. We don't know anything about his background. We don't even know what nationality he was, and I mean originally was. We have no idea. He would have probably come from a foreign land. Who knows what his religious background might have been. He could even have been born in slavery. You just don't know. And so there's a lot you don't know, but he's got a lot going against him. And yet he has some things going for him. There is within him something that causes him to talk with Paul. Some people have speculated maybe, you know, runaway slaves, oddly enough, tended to congregate in Rome because it was by far the largest city in the day, in anywhere in the area. And there was a fairly good size, as I understand it from history anyway, a fairly good size underground criminal element. And so it's the idea that if you're on the run, you kind of want to congregate with people that will be sympathetic to you. And there would have been more of them in Rome than anywhere else, again, oddly enough. And he might find more help there, oddly enough, than he would have found anywhere else. Certainly on the countryside, he's going to stand out like a sore thumb. In Rome, he can get lost in the underground, so to speak. Maybe he went there like for that reason. And who knows? Maybe someone talked to him, or he just got desperate enough that he remembered, you know, Philemon talking about Paul. Maybe he even saw Paul at some point in his past, needed help, and thought to himself, I need help, and I need it bad, and the only person I know of that I've ever seen that you can go to for help would be somebody like Paul. Who knows? But he did find his way to Paul, and he was converted by Paul. There's some other things that are interesting to me that stand out in his life. We're talking about things that, you know, maybe he had going for him. We've looked at a couple of people and their name. A lot of people have pointed out that the name Onesimus, ironically, means useful or helpful or profitable. And that Paul almost seems to be making a play on words in the book. He's not been very profitable to you, but now he is. He's profitable to me, he's profitable to the Lord, and he's even profitable to you when Paul writes this book trying to reunite the two of them together. Very strange situation. He does have the providence of God going for him. I believe the Lord promises any of us, if you want to know the truth, no matter your circumstances, and his are as bad, really, just about as anyone's can get, but if you want to know the truth, the Lord will help you. And if you seek to know the truth, you will find it. He certainly found it in Rome with the Apostle Paul. And he does have some other things going for him. He could have been from a master's house, you know, anywhere in Rome, but he happened to be from the book of Philemon, as it very definitely shows us, a very faithful Christian's home. Now that raises a question. Perhaps some of you have thought about this. If he's a faithful Christian and he's as good a guy as Paul seems to indicate he is, why does he still have slaves? And that might be something you want to explore. But nonetheless, his master is a Christian. And so he is someone that Paul can write a letter to and say, hey, Philemon, guess who, you know, I've met in Rome? Your runaway slave Onesimus. I know that he's wronged you. I want you to forgive him, and I want you to take him back. That's why I had the passage read that I did from Luke 17. If your brother repents, forgive him. And if he turns and repents numerous times, forgive him. And the apostle said, Lord, increase our faith. Sometimes we need a great deal of faith to be forgiving. It can be a very difficult thing to do when we feel we've been so wrong, and he would have been in that condition, perhaps. Paul did reach out to him. Paul was a debtor to all people, Romans 1. It didn't matter their background, it didn't matter ethnically what they were, it didn't matter their circumstances. Paul saw himself as a debtor to everybody, even a runaway slave. He's not, you know, as we would say down south, he's not culling anybody. He's not, you know, just saying, oh no, not you. You're a criminal. You're a runaway slave. I don't want anything to do with you. Let me move on to somebody more promising. He's not doing that. And what he had going for him also was the power of the gospel. The power of the gospel that is able to right a situation even like Onesimus. It can take what is absolutely hopeless, no future prospects, and turn it into the wonderful story that it became. It also was powerful enough to reach into the heart of an owner, a master, who's been wronged. And it is the kind of thing where someone can say, and it's an odd thing. I mean, really, when you think, we just accept it because it's in the Bible. But how odd a thing is it for one person to write to another and say, I've got your runaway slave here. He's become a fellow worker with me, and I'm sending him back. Now, he's been very useful to me, and I really would like to keep him working with me, but I'm going to send him back because that's what's right. But really what I want you to do is to let him go so he can be profitable to you and everybody else. I mean, how odd is that, really? And yet it's the kind of thing that Christians do. And not only that, but to expect the outcome that you want to expect is the outcome you're going to get. And in that story, if you remember in the book of Philemon, and I always find this extremely interesting, and Paul is like, I know everything's going to work out. By the way, I am going to be coming soon. And when I come there, I'm going to need a place to stay. So on top of everything else, let me ask you for that as well. Well, that's, Christians do that. And they're able to do that. But you also have Paul going to bat for him. And I want to mention that before any questions, any discussion you have. One of the last things I want to mention is this. When you have a person who's got every advantage, everything going for you, step up to bat, so to speak, to vouch for you. Now, I understand Paul's in prison and there's a lot going against Paul in that sense. But spiritually speaking, we know everything is going for Paul. Paul's got the respect of people like Philemon, where Onesimus obviously doesn't. Paul can write a letter to the Colossians saying, I look forward to meeting you guys. I know everything's going to be great between us when I get there. Onesimus doesn't. And you have somebody like that going to bat for Paul, for Onesimus. When you have someone of Paul's stature vouch for you, it goes a long way. And it tends to touch someone in Onesimus' condition, his position. In other words, Onesimus, where before he might have been like in the song here, we're troubled and tired and we're sick with sorrow and pain and everybody else is enjoying life, but we're not. You take new courage. You don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. Sure, I do. It's always been lousy. It'll be lousy tomorrow. But it turns it from all of that into a situation where, wow, maybe life can be different. And I think he came away believing that. We know from secular history, or at least it is most probable from secular history, because a generation or two down from Onesimus wrote about Onesimus. And close enough so that, you figure he's not, and knowing the guy that wrote it, he's not making all this up. He's telling you what has just passed down in Christian lore at that time. And if all of that is the case, Onesimus went home, Philemon forgave him, he worked with Paul, and eventually he comes back to Colossae, oddly enough. And how crazy is it in Christianity sometimes? He ends up being the preacher at Colossae and probably ends up being an elder there, which is insane, really, But that's the power of the gospel. And that's what can happen between Christians. And not really a whole lot to doubt that that is the case. I mean, it was Ignatius who wrote that. So probably very true. and eventually will end up under the persecution led by Domitian and Trajan in the last part of the first century, being martyred for his faith. Interesting story of a runaway slave. Questions. And there's a whole lot in this story really to ponder. I mean, the whole idea of what you're obligated to do to forgive, the whole question of slavery, etc., etc. Questions, discussion, comments? Got one here. Wes, you want to kind of curry for me here? Anybody need a card while he's coming up here to get this one? If you are a woman especially and you'd like to write out a question or a comment, take a card and write that out. Right there in the seat, right behind you. And if you are a man, just feel free to, ask the question, make the comment, and we'll get into the discussion. Let me read it here as it says, because of what Paul says in verses 15 and 16, Philemon. Let's go to Philemon for a moment. Turn over here. And Philemon in 15 and 16. So we'll read 15 and 16. And this is where Paul is asking for the forgiveness, where he says, for perhaps he, speaking of Onesimus, for perhaps Onesimus therefore departed for a season, a time, that you should receive him forever, speaking to Philemon, his master, not now as a servant, and the word is slave, not now as a slave, but above a slave, a brother beloved, especially to me, but how much more unto you, both in the flesh and in the Lord. Now here's the question and comment. Because of what Paul says in verses 15 and 16 to Philemon, does this imply that true Christianity, or the practice of it, would have the effect of abolishing slavery over time, either on the part of Philemon or on the part of Onesimus, and that Christianity would change the nature of those relationships? Very difficult question. And I'll answer it a couple of ways. One, if we look at the passages in the New Testament, we could go to the Old Testament and see some of it as well, but I'll just stay in the New Testament, say in Ephesians, Colossians, the idea of slavery is addressed from the standpoint of servants, slaves, here's what you need to do. Masters, owners, here's what you need to do. It regulates it. It doesn't command, in either case, servants, you need to revolt against your masters because slavery is wrong. It doesn't command the masters, masters, you need to release the slaves because slavery is wrong. It regulates it. It tells them how they are to treat one another, how they are to, especially being brethren, above any other relationship, they are to conduct themselves with each other. So if you're saying, does the practice of true Christianity demand the abolishment of slavery? I don't see that in the New Testament. Now, the question is asked in an interesting way because it says, will it effectively abolish slavery? It has. If I look back historically at the New Testament times and I see situations like Philemon and Onesimus, and there are not that many that still exist, but I see this. There are more of them from the 1800s, especially as people began to convert to Christianity in this country. And we all know in the first part of the 19th century, slavery was still an institution in America, a very abusive institution. And there are brethren, for example, who had slaves who, after becoming Christians, and especially after, naturally, if you're a faithful Christian, you're going to want to teach your slaves Christianity. And then you would have some of those Christians obeying the gospel. And what they would end up doing is, and I'll give you a name, if you've heard of David Lipscomb University or College or whatever it's called down in Nashville, Tennessee. David Lipscomb, the guy's name for, his father owned slaves. His father converted to Christianity, had slaves, and eventually some of them were converted. He did free them. And in the case of most of them went north. And sometimes, oddly enough, you would have Christians helping to facilitate that where they can move to Canada or move north. And in the case of one older woman who had been part of the family, all of David Lipscomb's wife, when he writes, his life, when he writes about her, he talks about the fact that she was so much a part of the family. She chose just continue to live, and she just kind of lived in a grandmother type figure, just kind of lived in the home all the rest of her life. But you did have situations like that. So if you ask me if the effects of slavery, you know, if true Christianity and the practicing of it demand the abolishing of slavery, no. And you don't see that in the Bible, as hard as that may be to understand. But effectively so, as you grow in respect of other human beings, and I think Christianity does that for you, as you respect things like freedom, as you love people in a way that you never have before, it becomes more and more and more, I think, the goal of a Christian to want to help other Christians as much as possible. That may mean, in certain circumstances, because of the institution and the effects of it, the best thing that can happen is for the two to mutually agree just to continue to live together in a working relationship. But it also may mean that you want to help free someone. That's about all I know I can say about it. In this particular case, Paul was saying of Onesimus, he'll be far more valuable to you, Philemon, as a freed brother who can go on helping me. And really, if you notice in the book, he can go on helping me in your place. You're not free to just pick up and leave your family and everything, you know, there in Colossae and go on the road with me, but this guy can. And I need him. I can use him, and you can allow him to go in your place. And apparently that's exactly what happened. Eckhart. And I think that's what happens. I know in the case of, it is interesting, anyone can go out there and read David Lipscomb's autobiography. It is interesting to listen to him talk about that. And I think in the case of Christians like that, that's exactly what happens. They look at the situation and it's like, you know, you get into slavery, you get into the whole institution because, hey, it's a monetary thing. You want someone, you know, in the case of our country, in the 1900s or before, I mean the 1800s or before, you want someone to work the field so you can make extra money. But it becomes far more important as a Christian to look at a human being as a human being rather than, I mean, you just can't look at a human being and see property the same way you can look at a horse. It's just not possible if you are a Christian. Now, again, the relationship, I mean, the situation of working together may continue, and that did happen in some cases. Some slaves chose that it would be better if we stay here and work together, you know, and go on, because what are we going to do? You know, I don't want to go into a foreign land where I don't know anything. You know, those are the prospects, because obviously you couldn't just free a slave in Virginia or Tennessee and have them go down the road and buy a piece of property and start working it or set up a business in town. No one was going to allow that. So they're either going to have to go into a foreign country where they perhaps don't want to go, or they're going to continue in some kind of working relationship. But the whole idea of I own you, I can do with you as I want, no, there's no way you can do that. And as you rightfully quote, you know, do unto others as you have them do unto you. I don't want to be treated like that, and I don't think anyone does. So it's not a simple, you know, yes and no, one way or the other type situation. It's not as simple as that. There are all kinds of things to consider. But again, you know, brethren did have to face it. Yeah.
Yes or no. Why
Yeah, that's a very good question. I'm going to give you my opinion, and that's all it is, okay? I think because the whole idea, I mean, think about what is said, especially adding Colossians and the scant statement there as well. He's sending Onesimus back with the book of Colossians, and obviously the book of Philemon as well, but the book of Colossians. But he's also sending him there to give, he and Tychicus, to give a personal report of all of Paul's affairs, and et cetera, et cetera. And this is why I think he does this like he does in Philemon. Because it is a personal letter and it is a personal matter, but I think Paul wants it made a very public thing and everybody brought into it. Now that's my opinion about it. In other words, Paul has made sort of an executive decision here. I converted Onesimus and I used him. You know, I took liberty to use him as my whatever, my fellow worker, my courier, my messenger, etc. I took the liberty to do that. I made the decision to do that. I want everybody to know about that. And I'm asking Philemon, really, I'm asking Philemon to free him, to allow him to work with me, and I want everybody to know about that. And it's really twofold. It's not just pulling everybody into this, what is a private matter, but it's also commendation of Onesimus. If he's going to be a companion of Paul, a fellow worker of Paul, everybody can see, you know, if it's circulated to everybody and all of that, everybody can see, yeah, Paul really, this is what Paul wants. So this is not Onesimus coming back, you know, saying, hey, I met Paul and everything's great. It's Paul saying, I want everybody to know this. Everybody, everything above board, everybody to understand where I am with it. Now, that's what I think, but it could be, you know, something else. Or at the very least, they have to treat them, A, they have to treat them as fellow human beings would treat one another. And B, if they're Christians, they've got to be treated as brethren, equal brethren. That much at least I believe he's saying. Whether or not he's saying, if you want to be right as a Christian, you've got to free all your slaves, you know, I don't know. But he's at least saying all of that. And that would follow. I mean, if you're going to be a Christian, you got all these principles in here. Regardless of what you do in life, you got to follow all the principles of Christianity. So it would be very difficult. If you were, you know, you think back, not just as being a slave, but think back to being a slave owner, how life might very well change once you become a Christian. And there have been brethren that had to face that. But there have been other brethren converted out of businesses and everything else that, you know, their practices were such that things had to change in life. I mean, it's as simple as that. And to me, you know, the most interesting part of the whole discussion of Philemon and Onesimus is all of that. I mean, as we see all of that. All right, let me read this question. And again, feel free with the discussions or the questions. Is there significance to Paul introducing himself as a prisoner of Christ Jesus? Now, that is interesting. I'll tell you what has been thought about that. And in verse 23, so let's look at verse 23, where he says, there salute thee Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus. And in verse 23, referring to Epaphras as my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus salutes you. Is there significance to that? I think so. And that is to say, that is to draw attention to the idea of being in bondage. There are different ways to be in bondage. And there are different ways to unfairly be in bondage. In other words, here's a man that is arrested, if you remember. We go back to the story in Acts, and to put it very briefly, and I'll try to be very brief. But he's taking a contribution for some people. He's just trying to take a collection of funds to give it to some poor people. And the very group of people, at least nationality of people he's trying to help out with collected funds, turns on him. Gets him arrested, and he has at least about a four-year, maybe a four-year-plus ordeal that leads to him being in jail. at least in Caesarea and under house arrest in Rome, and that ain't fair, And so I'm in bondage unfairly. Perhaps that was the case of Epaphroditus or Epaphras. I don't know. But yeah, I would say stressing that point is to say to people, sometimes you get in situations and you don't ask for them. Onesimus has been a slave, and you don't generally request to be a slave. And so sometimes it's unfair. And yet, it maybe just further draws attention to the fact that, feel some compassion. Feel some, put yourself in the place as a human being trying to walk in someone else's shoes about it. So maybe there is point to that. Yes. Hard to come.
In verse 19.
Okay. Well, he means spiritually speaking. In other words, I take it, and most, if not everyone, takes it, that what he is saying to Philemon, what he's reminding Philemon of, is the fact that he, Paul, has converted Philemon too. And so, just like, I think in those terms. When I think of, if someone says to me the name Dale Smeltzer, okay, I think about the hours and hours and hours that Dale spent with me to convert me. Okay, I owe for that. Now, obviously, Dale didn't send me a bill in the mail, to pay for that. But I owe for that. Okay? And so, what he's saying to Philemon is, if I spent time to convert you, you owe me. You owe that to me. And that's true of anybody that's ever taught by me, just like you owe your parents if they raise you like they should or whatever. So, what he's saying to Philemon is, I'm not asking for payment. I could say, you owe me even your own soul, in those terms. I could say that. I'm not saying it. But I could remind you that I would be well within my rights, to say to you, you owe a lot, Philemon. And to say to you, how about you just free all your slaves and go on the road helping me? I could say that, but I'm not. What I'm asking you for is to forgive this runaway slave, instead of treating him like you're within your Roman rights, and I stress that, don't do that. Give me, his service, his use. Give him his life, his freedom instead. And I believe that's what he means by it. But again, he is not, notice the way he's saying it. He's not saying it like, he's not demanding it of Philemon. He's still asking him. Okay? Any other questions, comments? Anyone, any ladies want to write one out or got one written out, or any men want a final comment or question? Jeremy. Well, yeah, and there would be a lot to address in what you just said, but yeah, definitely to say that no matter Paul's circumstances, whatever they were in, he continued to do what he was, you know, had always done. But secondly, to understand that, you know, the power of owning other human beings, and one of the greatest problems with slavery is that. You know, people get carried away with power. I'm sure you've all heard power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know, we all know that. But the power of owning another human being and then in turn seeing them as less than human, that's been a great problem. It's been a great problem in our country, and we still see, obviously, and I brought up today a couple of times, but Wednesday night, we know that all of that was facilitated by the racial hatred and everything else. So we still see the lingering effects of all that. And yet we look at someone like Paul, and we know Paul, you know, when he makes statements like, there is neither Jew nor Greek, etc., etc., Paul sees a human being as a human being. It matters not what they are ethnically. It doesn't matter bond or free. You know, slave or free, it just doesn't matter. And as a human being, one of the greatest things Onesimus had going for him is that he did meet someone like Paul that viewed everyone as a human being. And because of that, who knows what the background of Onesimus was. You know, Philemon could have been the most gentle, loving master that ever owned slaves. We don't know all that. But regardless, Onesimus, you know, would have seen in Paul someone that looked at him with the respect that any human being should be afforded. Because that's what Jesus teaches us to do. And as Christians, that's the way we should see everyone. Before we see, and it's difficult. I'm not saying that that's an easy thing to do. It's not. But to see people as human beings, to believe strongly in the Word of God, and I know we do, and I'm sure you do sitting here tonight. You believe we all come from Adam and Eve. We are all related equally. We all come from Noah, as we talked about this morning, and his three sons. We're all related. We're all the same race of people. And to see each other equally, and then to see each other as all we are people, regardless of our backgrounds, who have souls that need to be saved. And I believe that's the way Paul saw people. That's a wonderful thing. That's a beautiful thing. And that's a life-changing thing for someone to have that attitude. So you're right, Jeremy. We need to have that. And we should have that. You got one more? Let me try to do this one quickly, and then I'm going to close with this one. Okay. Paul obviously shows by example that when you are a Christian, you have a family whose bond should be stronger than blood. You should have gave me this before I just made the comments I made. But anyway, that a family that whose bond is stronger than blood, what a blessing. The words brother, child that are used here. And that's absolutely right. He's showing by example. It's not, you know, it's one thing to get in a class and say it. We need to live our lives in such a way that people see that in us. You are a person that believes what you say the Bible teaches. I talked to an individual from Newark the other day, and a little bit of this, not a lot, but a little bit of this came out in our conversation. We have to be these kind of people. We have to be people who live lives in such a way that others know that the bond between us as human beings is much stronger than blood. And that means, you know, I'm not, and I hope you understand what I'm about to say, and I want you to think about it. I am not a white man from Alabama who comes from a heritage of people that believe this and believe that. I am a human being who is a Christian and who is a product of exactly what this book says before I am anything. If I understand that and I treat other people accordingly, then things such as nationality and racial, you know, ethnic background and beliefs of my heritage and even my family will be far less important than what God teaches. And people will see that in my actions. Thank you so much for the discussion. It's not an easy one, but it is one we ought to explore from time to time, and especially as we realize that, you know, that kind of thing is still very real here in America and in many places in the world. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, this is the power of Christianity to change lives, to touch people in ways that nothing else can, to dig deep into the souls and hearts and minds and emotions of people. This is the practice of Christianity we've been talking about. If you believe in Jesus, that He is the Son of God, you'll confess that belief, and tonight you're willing to change your life. Regardless of how much change needs to be made, you're willing to. You'll be baptized for forgiveness of your sins. The Lord will save you. Now, maybe you're here tonight and you've been baptized, but there's something in your life that needs to be changed, or you want to ask for the prayers of the people here. You need to be stronger. You want to be. Won't you please come while Ed leads us in this song?